And now, with Sound Investing, here's Paul Merriman.
Before I get started, I just want to give you a heads up. I'll be referring to Table B14B in this podcast, and I'll try my best for those of you who are out on a walk to make it listener friendly and not overdo the numbers, but to make sure that you are aware of some numbers that I think are very important. I just got back, maybe I should say I just finished an amazing week, a week that started with the opportunity to speak to the New York City chapter of AAII, and they allowed us to invite folks, and I think even some other AAII chapters might have been invited, but we had 1,900 plus people sign up, which was fantastic. And somebody said, yeah, and about 30% will show up. And boy, they were right. Some 661 people joined us during the presentation. I made half, and Chris Pedersen made half. And I think generally, both of us were able to share some information that could be helpful. And for those who did not get a chance to join us, that program will be archived and on both an AAII site as well as our own website. But it was a wonderful opportunity for me to dig into the small cap value asset class for 45 minutes. And then came the big challenge, the very exciting opportunity to begin with, to make a presentation at the Bogleheads Conference in Rockville, Maryland. They were the 13th, 14th, and 15th. I had to leave early the morning of the 15th, as it was my wife's birthday, and we have to make these kind of important choices in life. There were speakers I would love to have seen on Sunday, but the good news is we will all be able to see all of the speakers in a matter of weeks as the Bogleheads archive those each year. And so we'll talk more about that later, and I'll talk about some of the people that I thought made wonderful presentations. You can't be at all of them because they have oftentimes two tracks going at one time. It was wonderful. I met lots of people that have followed our work. I met people who I admire in the industry that came to present. It was wonderful being on a panel with Jonathan Clemens and Bill Bernstein and Rick Ferry, and I mean it was just super. That's the good news. The other news, as far as I'm concerned, is I failed, and I failed big time. I made my presentation based on more is better. More information is better. I had the wonderful luxury of 45 minutes just a few days before, which allowed me to take my time and dig a little deeper. Then when I was cut back to 20 minutes for the Bogleheads, I cut off, I think, 12 of the tables that I presented, and my idea was I'll get through as many as I can in 20 minutes. And of course, that 20 minutes goes by very fast, and I covered a whole bunch of stuff. I think I covered probably a dozen tables and charts and graphs and things that I think make very important points, but I was on each one for such a short period of time that I know it did not achieve what I went there to achieve. I was hoping that there are people who would see even if you added a little bit of small cap value, it could make a difference. But talking to people who came there considering adding small cap value, my sense is I did not achieve my goal. And I can see it now. I can see that what I should have done is I should have taken probably the whole 20 minutes and talked about one, maybe two of the tables to make the points that I wanted to make. Because what I want people to understand is, one, that small cap value is a legitimate asset class. The academics believe so. And two, that it produces, because it's more risky, historically, a premium for that risk. And three, if you combine it with a fund that everybody seems to like, and for all the right reasons, the S&P 500 or the total market index, which are virtually the same in terms of return and volatility. I think I confused more people with my rapid-fire presentation. I had lots of compliments that they enjoyed the presentation, but I was really hoping for more than enjoyment. So I'm going to talk for a few minutes today because we don't have the archived pieces. I don't want to dig into the conference. I learned so much. I even learned things about John Bogle that I didn't know, and without anything bad meant by it, but some of it wasn't all good. And I've never heard people who know him talk openly about him like that. But obviously, he was a man on a mission, and sometimes when we're on a mission, things don't turn out the best for everybody. But we'll talk about that another day. It was a joy to be there. In fact, his son had come to dinner with the speakers. It was nice to meet him, and I'll talk about that dinner as well, because I heard some stories I'd like to share with you there. So today, what I want to do is I want to take one table, and it is the B14B table. I'm going to mention one other piece of data here that I think is just of short-term interest. In fact, when I say short-term, I mean for maybe 5 minutes of your life, and then it's gone. The people I spoke with after I made my presentation, who came in, and I will assume open-minded. Now, I don't know if they were open-minded or not, but they were certainly being nice to me in the conversation and kind of nicely patted me on the head and said, good job, but I'm not changing. I will think I'll be able to respond to many of those comments. And by the way, you all have looked at B14B before, I think, but I'm going to give it a different spin in the hopes that it will, one is that they'll have some people who will be listening to the podcast who are still on the fence, and two, those of you who are already small cap value advocates for some part of your portfolio, that you'll find this information of interest. There's a lot of feedback that I get that really is a matter of saying the future is not going to look like the past. And I have no way to deal with that comment, because anything I say, let's put it this way. If I tell the truth, then not only does it not change the person's mind, possibly, but in telling the truth, I may be attacking something else they believe that may or may not be the truth. So first of all, before I get into table B14B, I want to share what I saw last night as I looked at what the market did yesterday. And I look at Morningstar's homepage. This is the free site. Each day, I'd like to see how the market did. Now, a lot of people, including some of the folks at that conference, I think, have a sense that these funds go up and down in concert more than they do. And while I may only look at one day here, in a sense, it represents 1 year, or it could represent 5 or even 10 years in terms of very different kinds of returns. Now, obviously, I'm happy that the example I'm going to use makes small cap value look very good for a few minutes. And for the day, October 16th, the small cap value was up 1.75%. Large cap value, and these are all Morningstar, up 0.8%. So small value, twice for one day what large cap value did. Large cap growth was up 1.4%, and small cap growth up 1.67%. So it is really quite a range from large to mid to small. And it can be this way for a day. As a matter of fact, when the market opened this morning, I'm recording on the 17th, the first numbers, large cap value down 0.11, large cap growth down 0.93, small cap growth up 0.16, small cap value up 0.5. So this difference in returns happens short term, it happens intermediate term, it happens all terms, and it's part of the process. And so the other part, I think, that people kind of get lost in is this recency bias, the point at which we decide that something that people believe in is no longer believable. You know, this is one of the challenges for investors to take a stand, I'll call it for a lifetime. I mean, when I talk about a stand for small cap value for a lifetime and a stand for the S&P 500 for a lifetime, doesn't mean it's going to be 50-50, 60-40, 70-30, or whatever forever, but that it's going to be, in my mind, a combination of those two potentially over a lifetime. But when I look at table B14B, the first thing I see is that Darrell, when he built this, he's got the S&P 500 down one column, small cap value down another column, and then all of these combinations were with 10% small cap value, 20, 30, 40, 50, etc. So you see all the combinations, you see the returns, you see the risk. But he also built an extension to the table so that it looks at the outperformance, or you could call it the underperformance if you want, but it looks at each of these 53 years, and it notes, like in 1970, the S&P 500 was up 4%, small cap value was down 1.5%, and so not only did the S&P 500 win the year, but it won by 5.4%. So now we can look for patterns if you want. If you want to look for when it worked and when it didn't, etc., what you would see is that for the first 10 years, 7 of the years, small cap value outperformed, and 3 of the years, the S&P outperformed. But the next decade, small cap value won in 4 of the 10. And in the following decade, it won in 3 of the 10. And I can tell you, because I remember people were saying, that is the end. That is the end of small cap, not blend. And this is, of course, about small cap value. But the claim was the small cap premiums were gone, a thing of the past. And then in the next decade, from 2000 through 2009, small cap value wins 9 out of the 10 years. And then in the 2010 to 2019, small cap value wins in 4 of the 10 years. And finally, when we look at the very short part of the first 3 years of this decade, in 2 of the years, small cap value has outperformed. And in 1 year, the S&P 500 has outperformed. So when somebody tells me that the small cap value is dead, you know, I just don't buy it. There's not enough evidence that that would be the case. One could say, theoretically, if one wanted to look at the last 23 years, starting in 2000, that what might be considered dead would be the S&P 500, because it compounded at 6.3% through 2000 through 2022. And if you were in the total market index, it compounded at 6.4%. And by the way, if you go all the way back to 1928, the academics have done their best to replicate the total market index and the S&P 500, hypothetically. And there's a 0.1% advantage to the S&P 500. But this is important to me, this difference between 6.3 and 6.4. It's important to me because there are a lot of people who think that the case for the total market index and why it's better than the S&P 500, the case is that it is not just large cap growth and large cap value, but it also has small cap. So if there's going to be a small cap premium, by golly, you're going to get it from the total market index. They don't tell you that the way they've configured that index is that they have kind of matched the very fine small cap value return with the very poor small cap growth return, and call that that's the small cap value and growth exposure. It doesn't move the needle. The interesting thing is that if you simply took 90% S&P 500 and 10% small cap value from 2000 through 2022, the needle moves. And I call that fairly recent performance. Now, how much did it move? Well, let's just follow the bouncing ball on this. Because here's what we know. I mentioned a minute ago, 6.3 for the S&P 500 and 6.4 for the total market index. And remember again, the attitude about people in the total market index is they've got all the small cap value they need, but they're proud to have what they've got. What do we know? If we put 90% into the S&P 500 and the other 10% in small cap value. Now, this is largely based on real returns for this period of time, not totally. In some cases, we have to go to indexes because in 1970, there was no S&P 500 and there was no small cap value, okay? But here's what we know from the indexes that have been provided by the academic community. We know that with 90% in the S&P 500 making 6.3%, and instead of deferring to the total market index for your small and mid-cap, go ahead and create a standalone small cap value. Now, as you all know, we have our best-in-class recommendation, which happens to be the Avanta Small Cap Value. Now, there are small cap value funds that the Dimensional Fund has been around since 1993. And I want to talk about that performance in a minute. But I want to finish what you find. If you put 10% in small cap value, specifically, let's call it a pure small cap value, and not small cap growth, over that period of time, that asset class compounded at 12%. And with 10% of your portfolio in that and the other 90% in the S&P 500, your compound rate of return is 8.15 versus 6.3. Now, that's meaningful. For folks who looked at the table going back to 1970 with the S&P 500 for 90%, and the other 10% in small cap value, the additional return is only 0.4% a year. So what we know from 2000, we don't know what is out of whack. Has the S&P 500 somehow all of a sudden been downgraded in the amount of premium that it's going to pay for the risk of putting your money into the S&P 500? Well, maybe if enough people know it and do that, maybe it won't be as profitable as it's been in the past. I don't know. But what I do know is that there is nothing that changes my feeling. By the way, it always has to be feeling, because we're talking about faith in what the future is going to look like, and we can't have anything but a feeling. It would be easy to have a very depressing look at the future if you wanted to make it that way. But I'm looking at the market has been going through these terrible ups and downs. Well, not terrible ups, great ups and terrible downs since 1928. I mean, you've got war in there, you got depression in there, you got high inflation, you got low inflation, and through thick and thin, according to the academics, there has been a premium for stocks over bonds, represented largely by the market, the S&P 500, but there's also been a premium for large cap value and small cap blend and small cap value. So one thing that I failed to do in the Bogleheads, I failed to make the point that if you look at all of the single years, small cap value has outperformed large cap blend 56% of the time. If you go out 5 years, it outperforms 64% of the time. If you go out 10 years, it's 76% of the time. If you go out 15 years, it's 85%, and by the time you get out to 20, it's 99.5% in favor of small cap value. So the idea that, and I tomorrow, well, actually the day you get this, I will be 80 years old. I do not think that I've got 20 years ahead of me, but I'm hoping for 10. I think that'd be great if I could not only live for 10 more years, but teach for 10 more years. So the bottom line is that theoretically, there's a 76% chance that I will get a premium over the S&P 500. Now, I know what confused people in my presentation at the Bogleheads, because it was made so quickly. They saw the telltale chart that suggested that small cap value doesn't make any money for very, very long periods of time. In fact, that's not the case. What it is that there are periods where the S&P 500 does better. And you can see this if you want to. You can go to Morningstar and you can put in the fund that Dimensional Fund started, I believe, in June or so of 1993. I think that's DFSVX. I know from Morningstar that the return for the Dimensional Small Cap Value from the beginning of its existence is up 2,240%. Now, that's simply the compounding over a long period of time. During that same period of time, the S&P 500 from Vanguard was up 1,596%. So, big advantage to the Dimensional Small Cap Value. Now, that's the good news. But I will tell you, there were two times from 1993 to 2023 when the DFA Small Cap Value came down and, in essence, touched to be the same as the S&P 500 and then took off again. And it wouldn't shock you, because small cap value has underperformed recently, that it went back down and touched again. And over the last few years, has taken off again. Now, I recall, in 21, I think the S&P 500 was up around 20%. And the small cap value was up around 40%. And then last year, the S&P 500 was down about 18-19%, and small cap value was down under 5%. So for the last 2 years has been a big advantage to the small cap value. Talking about a 10% piece of small cap value along with a 90% S&P 500, or it could be the total market index, doesn't matter to me. But the bottom line is the volatility in terms of standard deviation is virtually the same. And over this long period of time, as I mentioned, the compound rate of return with small cap value 10% and the S&P 500 at 90% was a 10.8% compound rate of return versus 10.4% for the S&P 500. So I think if I had just in my presentation focused on this one table, because the table goes on to show you the worst 12 months and to show you the worst drawdown. All these important numbers are there for people to see. And I got an email from a gentleman who had read an article that we wrote about putting money aside for our granddaughter and what we've done for our other grandchildren over the years. But we had mentioned that we had put away money into a combination of small cap value and the S&P 500. And he kind of apologized. He did thank me for the article about the idea, because that had motivated him to do this, he said, but that he was going to use a combination of total U.S. and total international. And the first thing I would tell you is that compound rate of return is going to be a little lower than the U.S. by itself over most of that 53-year period. And that there was, in essence, almost no impact of diversification by adding more large-cap blend, but having the large-cap blend be not only U.S. but international. Because even if you look at small cap value internationally has an advantage over small cap blend and large cap value and large cap blend internationally. So to me, the diversification step from the S&P 500 or the total market index, the smart step is not to add more large cap blend so that you can have some diversification of currency rates that you are likely to actually build a more profitable financial future, adding asset classes, one, that potentially do better, and two, really don't go up and down together. So I hope this conversation has some impact on those people who are on the fence. When I say it doesn't matter to me, this is not a matter of pride or because I had a debate with Rick Ferry and you chose Rick Ferry's bottom line over my bottom line advice. It isn't about that. It's about all the evidence that has been shown about the addition of not just a portfolio of many stocks, but adding a portfolio of many stocks that represent additional asset classes. And that combination of S&P 500 and small cap value gives you a beautiful balance of small and large and value and growth. And if I could add just one more small, but I think very important comment. In that debate with Rick, and it was not really a debate, it was just each of us sharing how we felt about the addition of small cap value. But in the end, Rick said that a small cap value is okay, but you should limit it to 25%. And I'm saying small cap value is okay, even if it means you only add 10%. And if you decided to add 50%, as we have for our granddaughter, 50-50 S&P 500 small cap value, I think you'll be just fine in either case. So I will be in the coming weeks talking about the Bogleheads conference. It was terrific. Met some people that I've spent a lifetime or many years admiring. And had a chance to meet a whole bunch of you folks that join me from time to time in these podcasts and our articles. So stick around, come back from time to time. Some people said they do it every week, and I think, oh, that's a big commitment. But also, don't ignore those truth tellers. As I said, Ben Felix, boy, he has some of the finest work in the video arena. About investing in large and small and value and growth and all of these different asset classes. So thanks for listening to us, and we'll see you next week.
That was Paul Merriman with Sound Investing. Sound Investing, soundinvesting.com, and paulmerriman.com are produced and exclusively owned by Paul Merriman, who is solely responsible for their content. For more information, free articles, mutual fund recommendations, and more, visit paulmerriman.com.